This is an RNZ podcast.
Nō mai whakarongo mai ki te ao tai whenua. Welcome to Country Life, I'm Carol Stiles. Today we're taking you out to the National Agricultural Field Days. It's on again this year after being cancelled like so many other things in 2020. The crowds have been great, 29,000 on the first day and 34,000 on Thursday. And the weather's been mainly cooperative. We're also heading to North Canterbury today to spend time with a regenerative farmer. And we're meeting an up-and-coming farmer who has just won the Ahu Whenua Young Māori Farmer of the Year title. But first, we're out at Mystery Creek. I popped into the Environmental Protection Authority's stand. It's the first time it's been at the field days, and there were a few people making appointments to come back later.
Hi Carol, my name is Paula Knapp. I'm the General Manager Engagement with the EPA. And look, the big thing that we're wanting to achieve here is just to connect with farmers. There's such a great opportunity at Field Days where we have so many people coming through. It's for us to actually listen and to hear and understand the things that are important to farmers, both the opportunities and the challenges. And we want to take that back inside our organisation so we can use that thinking in terms of the way that we can provide services or interact with people moving forward.
What's the role of the Environmental Protection Authority?
So the EPA is New Zealand's primary environmental regulator. So in terms of the work we touch that relates to farmers, the hazardous substances and new organism space is a key one, and we also administer the emissions trading scheme.
Tell me, who have you got over here?
So over here we have Jason Muir, and he runs a business called Political Cuts. Now, for our purposes, we've called it Cuts and Kōrero, and the purpose of this is to invite farmers and the farming community into a space where they can have a conversation with us about the things that are important to them in an environment that's safe and is relaxed, but where they can talk about the things that really matter.
And get their hair cut at the same time.
It's a win-win.
Have you been privy to some of those conversations today?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of people who are talking about their connection to water, their connection to land. There's people who are talking about things like regenerative farming options. And there's a lot of people who are talking about the way that they work with others in their community and they think about the different plantings that they place on their land, for example. Carol, let me introduce you to Jason Muir.
The man wielding the scissors.
The man wielding the scissors. That's a great way to
describe it. It's the only power I've really got, that I've got a pair of scissors in my hand.
So, it's your job to have conversations.
Correct.
With your clients. People have come in for a free haircut. What sort of things are you talking about?
Well, the first one, of course, is always, how do you want your haircut? And then I am conducting an official national survey here of what is everybody's favoured Sunday roast. So is it lamb, hogget or mutton? You can see lamb's going ahead. We've had a few off the side. We've had a bit of chicken, wallaby, which I wasn't expecting, and wild game. So you can see lamb's clearly out in front. So those are the two most important things that we start with.
And then?
That's right. And then it's on to the environment. So we're asking people really, what does environmental protection mean to them? What do the words environment and protection mean, singly? Then, you know, really guided, I guess, by the conversations that come forth, and they are very varied because everybody's coming from such different backgrounds here. You know, kind of getting into things like, what do you want the long-term future? What would you imagine the long-term future is going to look like? I guess, like, anybody like yourself would, or anybody that's asking questions, what are the problems getting there?
If there's a theme coming through, what are people telling you?
Oh, I think that the theme coming through is that people want their environment to be in a better space than when they started necessarily.
Are they wary or concerned about some of the regulations?
Oh, look, there's certainly a little bit of, like, not hesitation towards it, but just, I guess, a want for people to be a little bit patient, that it takes time for changes to happen and that it costs money as well. But by and large, people are very positive. I don't think it's opposition to the regulations and everything. It's just a little bit of patience and understanding. Yeah. And actually, the other thing that's come through is that people love that someone from the government's here actually listening to people on the ground. That's the other one. Yeah.
Now, you're getting your hair cut.
Yep.
How's he doing?
Oh, he's doing a good job so far. I don't have a lot of hair. I guess it makes it easier for him.
And have you guys been having a bit of a conversation about the about the environment?
No, not quite. We've just been talking about what I do for a job and what kind of haircut I want.
And have you put your preference up for a roast?
Yes, lamb. 100% lamb.
There are more than 1,000 exhibitors at Field Days this year, and the site stretches over 47 hectares, so you get plenty of exercise when you're out there. I've been in and out twice this week, and the traffic was flowing slowly but steadily. The only problem I had was finding my car in the dark in a faraway paddock on Wednesday night. All I can say is thank goodness for electronic keys that make your lights flick on and off in the distance. Anyway, now to our look at farming conditions. We managed to track down a few visiting farmers from around the country at Field Days. The first didn't have to come far. He's from Waikato.
So my name's Bart van der Veen, dairy farm in Springdale, milking 220 cows, 50-50 share milking.
How was your trip to Field Days today?
A three-hour trip from Springdale to here was a little excessive, but...
How many k's away are you?
A normal drive would probably be about 45 minutes, but it's well worth going, so it's all good. Yeah, excited to be here.
How are things on the farm? It's a new farm for you.
Yes. So we've moved from low-order share milking to 50-50 share milking, so, yeah, it's been really exciting. Very lucky to have a lot of grass when we got here, and cows looking really good, so all in all, a perfect start.
There must be lots to find out about a new farm when you arrive.
Yeah, even this morning I started a machine up and for some reason the pulsators weren't going and there's something that I need to do that I haven't done. Because actually the only downside of this season so far is I've had one slip cow and two heifers that have just, they're full term, they're just born really early. So someone must have slipped a bull in there a little too early. So we're stuck milking three cows. Right now I'd rather have another 20 so I can start supplying, but it doesn't look like that.
What do you do with the milk?
At the moment, we've got two calves to feed, but then the rest, it's saved up for later on for the older calves. Yeah, nothing's wasted.
What are you here to buy today, or are you just looking?
Absolutely nothing. My checkbook is closed. I get that it's an $8 payout, but my pockets are closed. But I'm definitely having a look. You know, we haven't had Field Days we didn't have it last year, so just excited to be here, really. Yeah.
Hi, my name is Alan Fleming from Te Puke, and I'm a gold kiwifruit grower in Te Puke. Take great pride in growing good gold kiwifruit to send around the world. Enjoy the science of it and the challenges of producing better and better quality and quantity of kiwifruit. It's certainly an industry I enjoy working in. I'm very proud of the fact that we're world leaders in kiwifruit. I'm doing my bit to try and maintain that prestige. We set the bar very high, or Zespri set it high for us, and I support that strategy.
How's this year been, growing-wise?
Challenging. It was a dry year, as was the previous year, but we did produce to a good level, very good level. Fruit quality was not quite as good, and I think it was... probably a lack of water at an early part of the season and the formative times of the fruit.
What sort of price range is gold making per hectare?
I think the industry average number of trays is 16,000 trays a hectare, and last year Zespri achieved $12.48, I think, per tray. Some orchards are producing well over 20,000 trays, myself included, and that times $12 something certainly is over $200,000 worth of fruit coming off per hectare before costs.
William Beetham, Wairarapa Upper Farmer, just east of Masterton Federated Farmers Meet in Wiltshire. So the conditions on farm in Wairarapa, it's beautiful and warm, and we've had rain. So there's a lot of farmers who are feeling a lot of relief that the rain has finally come. Things are nice and warm. Even though we've had a bit of rain, we're getting shearing done. And a lot of the arable guys are just watching their crops grow or enjoying buying in some lambs on grass that is growing flat out.
Sheep and beef farmers must be happy at the moment because prices are pretty good.
A lot of sheep and beef farmers are quite happy at the moment with the value of red meat. meat. Wool is still always a big question, and we're moving into a lot of guys who will shear twice or do some winter shearing in the Wairarapa and across New Zealand, and they're still struggling to get decent value for their wool, and we're finding that some contractors' prices are increasing. So that's a real challenge for our industry, but I think our industry's up for it, and I can see a great future for wool if we continue to focus on creating value in it.
And why did you come to Field Days this year?
Oh, that's because Federated Farmers, we've got a stand here, and we get an opportunity to connect with a lot of our members and also talk to a few non-members, so it's a great opportunity.
What issues are they bringing up with you?
Listen, I think the biggest issue that we're facing, and it's really interesting in terms of I was at the KPMG business breakfast this morning presenting the agri-business agenda, and the clear part of that agenda was how do we deal with the breadth of change and challenges that are happening both in market and in New Zealand for farmers, and the challenge that is for, I suppose, everybody's well-being and mentally. And then I talk to farmers and they're talking about, hey, listen, we're doing our best to change, we're looking for opportunities to do better, but we're really struggling with everything that's coming everything that's coming down the line at the moment and how we deal with it. That's just such a common theme that we're facing across our industry and across the sector right now, and I think that's one of the most important things that I've noticed in the conversations today.
Would you say farmers are under stress?
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt that farmers are under stress, and whilst we're facing, say for example in the red meat sector, some of the best pricing we've faced and we've had for a generation, they're under stress because of the breadth of issues that we have to deal with in this industry. And, you know, we can go from immigration to employing people on the ground through to the environmental issues, through to health and safety, all of these aspects, climate change, that the farmers want to tackle and are trying to deal with, but it's just so much happening at one point in time. But that's across the sector from both the industry and farmers.
Hi, I'm Liam Martin from Canterbury, and I work for a cropping company called Cropmark Seeds. We sell proprietary ryegrasses and brassicas and clovers.
So you're here at Field Days to introduce farmers to what's new and what works?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, this is the first year we've had a crack at having a stand here at Field Days, so just a chance to sort of fly the flag and have a talk with farmers and get our products out there and... Yeah.
How are things in Canterbury?
Obviously, there was a fair bit of rain there a week or so ago, and some of the farmers closer to the foothills were quite badly hit in terms of flooding and quite a few winter crops drowned out. But overall, closer to the coast where I live, we only probably got about 70 mils, so that soaked away pretty quickly. But at the moment, I guess your dairy farmers are starting to graze their winter crops, and it was just a good top-up of water for some of the cropping guys, so... Yeah,
I guess it's a bit late for farmers who have lost crops to re-sow, but have any been in contact about what their options could be?
At this stage, a lot of them are still trying to just assess damage sort of in terms of how much crop they've lost and work out plans on getting in supplement feed to replace those crops and fix damage on the farm in terms of fencing and bits and pieces. But I'm sure, I guess now it's a bit late to be sowing, to be fair, as we're into winter. So as we get closer to spring and the ground conditions start to warm up again, they'll be looking to redrill some of those paddocks back into permanent pasture.
Hi, I'm Malcolm from Simple Naked Soap, and I'm a goat farmer from South Otago.
How are things on the farm at the moment?
Starting to get a little bit wet, but the goats are faring up well. They're in good nick, and all in all, we're looking pretty good.
Are your goats housed?
No. They've got free range of the farm, and they've got sheds open 24/7, windbreaks all around the farm that they can put themselves under, shelter belts, and they choose whether they put themselves in the sheds or in the shelter belts, or in fact stay out with the rain's not going to last long.
Do you milk year-round?
No. We've been dry now for 3 months, and we've got babies due at the end of September, so we'll be full-on milking 30 does from then, pretty much. Yeah. Babies stay on their mums, and we share milk and get the excess.
Oh, okay. So now that's unusual, isn't it?
Very unusual. So if you look at a milking farming way of life, we're the complete opposite of what's normally done. It means for us better quality of life for the does. Our udder health is, it's so easy to manage, it's not funny. The babies stay on there, they're always hunting for the milk because we all know how vigorous babies are feeding off udders. And our top milkers give us a litre of milk and feed twins at the same time.
What do you do with the milk?
Make it into body wash, soap bars, bars for sensitive skin. Our most sensitive is made with a colostrum milk. And Tracy bakes a little bit of homemade cheese, a bit of halloumi goes on the barbecue for us, and she has the milk in her tea.
So you don't sell any of your milk to go into milk powder or cheese that anyone else makes?
No. There's too many MPI hoops to jump through there. And look, if it's good enough for the ancient Egyptians to bathe in goat milk, we're making it good enough for the Kiwis here today.
Yep, hi, I'm John Kennedy. We're farming just out of Winton, Ariete Plains in Southland.
What has the week been like?
Well, the week has been progressively getting wetter, but prior to that it was looking very, very good.
Now, you've got a dairy farm and you would have just wrapped up for the season. How was it?
The season's been exceptional, actually. We were lucky. I realise a lot of the rest of the country, including parts of Southland, have been very, very dry. But we really have had a great season.
And the milk payout's pretty good at the moment?
It is, yeah. We're very lucky like that. And I think we do have to be a little bit careful around how we spend money because you never know what's around the corner.
What's the farm labour situation like on your farm?
It is not 100%. I've got all shear milkers actually, so they provide the labour, but one of our properties is short of one staff member. And I know that they are having difficulty in finding another one. And I'd like to see the government actually perhaps more than 200, I think, would be what I'd like to see.
You'd like to see more than 200 workers be welcomed into New Zealand?
Yes, correct. I guess there's a lot of pressure on all employers at the moment, staff-wise, but with farming, you can't really change how you're farming easily. And so if you are short of staff, then it puts a lot of pressure on those people that are left on the farm.
How's Winton doing? If you're in Winton, what sort of feeling is there?
Oh, Winton's a great spot actually. We've been there 30 odd years now and it's an awesome little town and what concerns me actually is that we really just lost our last bank the other day. So I think that's a big issue for rural towns, losing their bank. You know, you lose a bank, then other things sort of follow. So I'd like to see the banks just sort of come to the party a wee bit. And I see Twizel has got an integrated banking service. And I quite like that principle where, you know, there's three or four banks in together. Yeah, it just seems to me that, you know, we need to keep as many services as possible.
Now, you're here at Field Days. Why have you come up?
I haven't been up here for a few years, and I love Waimumu, the Field Days there. I think they're great, but Mystery Creek has always been a bit of a draw card for me, and I'm not actually here to purchase anything, but there's plenty to see and do, and you never know, something might take my fancy.
John Kennedy from Southland. He's one of more than 100,000 people who will go through the gates at Field Days this year, and the four-day event finishes on Saturday.
This is Country Life on RNZ National 101 FM.
In 2012, the first Ahu Whenua Young Māori Farmer Award was held. It's designed to recognise talented up-and-coming young Māori farmers and growers, as well as encouraging young Māori to make farming a career choice and to showcase to prospective employers the talent pool that exists within Māori. So Friday, May the 14th, 2021, was a big night in New Plymouth.
So, ladies and gentlemen, just repeating in case you missed it, the Ahu Whenua Young Māori Farmer of the Year 2021 is Quinn Morgan. Hō mai rā te pakipaki.
Yeah, had no idea that I was going to get called, so I was still looking at the ground. Looked up and everyone's looking at me, and then I looked at her and then they announced it again.
Quinn Morgan. Ngāti Tūwharitoa, Ati Haunui a Paparangi. What a night for Quinn and his wife, Samantha.
Aroha mai te whānau, a little bit whakamā. It was harder than the old wedding bells, eh, this one?
Yeah, what was the night like? Because there were about 800 people there, weren't there? Māori
yeah.
King was there.
Yep.
MPs.
Yep. Yeah. Tūwharitoa Chief was there. And that was a big thing for us, coming from Tūwharitoa. The night, nervous. Nervous.
He
especially.
Was nervous. Oh, my goodness. In the morning, he was just stressed out. He was watching me get ready. And I was like, go for a walk. So I ended up going for a walk and then...
Ducked out for a coffee, got myself together, then come back and got ready. But just nerves, just a different type of nervous. Like, played sport my whole life and never been that nervous before, leading up to an event. Yeah, I was blown away. And then with the speech, I left out quite a bit of people and I was didn't get to my employers and all that sort of stuff.
Since winning the award, Quinn and Samantha have moved from a 570-cow farm near Whakatane to one at Galatea, about 45 minutes inland. They're still with the same employers, but on a 95-hectare farm with 290 cows. And you're only 26?
Yeah, 26, yeah.
But you've also only farmed for one season.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was the biggest thing, and I have to sort of owe a lot of that to Tangaroa Walker as well, Farm for Life, and my employers just looked after us so much. Yeah. And we talked right from the get-go about the sort of goals I had, and I wanted to hit the ground running, and they were on board with that. And they were
definitely big mentors.
Still are till today.
And, still are till today.
What do you want to achieve? And what onus do you have now that you've won this too? Does it put a responsibility on you?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. Well, I took that responsibility with both hands. There's a lot of mana that comes with the Awhenua Young Māori Farmer trophy. We first entered to, I guess, better our career and get a flash job and all these sorts of things. And as soon as we got named a finalist, we sort of realised we're part of something bigger than ourselves.
Yeah.
And it's not about us anymore. Mm. The best thing is, had a lot of people reach out so far trying to get into dairy. So just working with them to try and get them in and sort of show them what helped me. Teamed up with Farm for Life, so that's been massive as well.
Especially with newcomers with no experience.
Yeah.
Because Quinn was sort of in that same position, trying to find a job and has no experience.
Yeah, got knocked back quite a bit. Mm. Yeah, about four. I would apply for about 40 plus jobs, I think. But understandable, you know, especially when you start the season, you're carving around the corner, you sort of want someone with a bit of experience that you can bring to the team. So I owe that to my employers and said they could teach me everything. And
You've won a huge thing after one season, you know?
Yeah, got quite a bit of job offers. And
trying to send us down south and all over New Zealand.
Yeah, we don't take that lightly, and that's a massive achievement for us. Yeah. And if we could pay that forward to other, you know, not just young farmers, but anyone want to change a career and get into dairy, we will. Mm. Yeah, so we're here now, and I'm a sole charge manager on this farm. So
we're always keen for a challenge.
Yeah, love a good challenge. Mm.
And that's just as well. Quinn grew up in Taumaranui and Whanganui before moving to Australia in 2007 with his mother, stepfather and sister to start a new life. But early last year, suddenly New Zealand beckoned again.
I moved back in January of 2020 by myself, just me and my suitcase, with big hopes, big dreams to find a career for us. And obviously COVID had hit, so they got stuck in Perth and I was stuck here for 6 months, and that was probably the hardest thing.
Yeah, it was being
without the family. But at the same time, we were mature enough to understand that there's a good opportunity if I stayed here and just hit the ground running. And she stayed there with the kids. And it was hard, but we're so grateful that we get to be a bit of fruit off that decision right now.
And so just going back to that, so you were actually in Perth. That's when did you move there?
In 2015 from Brisbane, where I finished high school in Brisbane, and then we met in Brisbane, and we decided we wanted a new life. So we moved in 2015, had our kids over there, and then just one trip to New Zealand for a wedding, and that sold us and we're coming home.
Mm. And what were you doing there?
I was working in the fitness industry, so I used to work in a gym. A little bit cleaner than this one here.
And you played a bit of rugby and
sport? Yeah. So I played a bit of rugby, and I had a pretty good career.
You managed to keep up and sneak his way into WA Māori's or something like that.
Yeah, so I made state in WA without training. I'm sort of all in with anything I do. If I do something, I just like learning new things and... I've been told to stay put now, so yeah. So
that wasn't on your mind though when you were over there. You just thought, let's come home, let's make and find another job. But this wasn't on your mind.
Nah. Mm. So the police force was my first intentions. Was going all right, and then obviously COVID had hit, so they paused all recruitments in the Central Plateau, and that's where I was staying at the time. And so I just sort of had to adapt, and I was lucky enough now I've got a lot of family that farm. That's sort of where I found my love for dairy.
On my end, it was a bit scary with COVID happening and Quinn in another country. So we actually, before lockdown, we booked his ticket because nothing was happening.
Yeah, getting knocked back.
I was
from
getting
jobs
scared.
that was a hard one.
He had an interview on the Friday, and he had a flight booked on the Monday. But he ended up getting the job on the spot. And
So not flying back to Perth.
No, so he called me, said he got it, and I was like, yep, no, just stay there.
Yeah.
Big thing for you, though,
We had 2 days to decide whether I leave and we just live in Perth and or I stay here. And I sort of told the employers, it's my goals. If you're willing to take me on, I'll be happy. And they said, yeah, we'll take you on. So I was like...
Yeah. And what are your goals?
Yeah, so the end goal is definitely self-employment. We'd love to be contract milking or share milking within the near future. Since being a part of the Ahu Whenua, our horizon has definitely broadened in this,
The police force?
Nah, not at the moment. Maybe if I do good and I get to own a farm earlier than later. Then.
But, so that is the ultimate goal?
Yeah, it would be definitely. Get your name on the letterbox. That's definitely high on the goals list. But in the meantime, just doing the best we can for this farm.
She's car ferrying this year for us. So.
Yeah. So first year car ferrying, and then
milking,
drop the kids
like
off, come out on farm.
Because that's been a big part too, has it? That you can actually be around for the family.
Yeah, heard a lot of bad things about dairy. Like it isn't family friendly. But since being in dairy is probably the most time I've got to spend with my family. So, and that's something that would love to. Again, I'd like to give massive raps to my employers because they're real family orientated. And that's something I'll carry on, the culture. If we do get staff in the future, we'll be really family orientated.
Special. Well, should we have a bit of it? You haven't been over the whole of this farm, have you? You've only been here 2 days.
No, not yet. I've been inside trying to unpack and clean everything up.
We'll go and have a look.
Yeah, we'll go have a look. We'll go see how it feels.
But you've got a puppy here too, so is that a little nod to sheep farming?
Hopefully hunting, so don't have to buy meat all the time. But nah, we get a beast, and I haven't had any venison in a while, so hopefully it can help me get a deer somewhere.
Yeah.
So. Well, you've got no excuse to go. Yeah. There is it on your doorstep.
I've actually been up there a couple of times when I used to live in Nuff. But nah, that's it. Make the most of it. It's good as. It's good. We're just soaking everything up right now.
But you came from a small, because you grew up in Tomaranui, or started in Tomaranui.
My stepdad was a dairy farmer for a year or two seasons, and back then I think I was just too interested in the PlayStation, and I was I was always a city slicker type of kid, so I was never out there doing everything, and he was cracking up too. He called me and he's like, oh, you probably come out 2 or 3 times and then you go win a dairy award. Samantha's actually doing the diploma in agribusiness at the moment.
Yeah.
So we're trying to tackle all areas of farming to be self-sufficient within us too and build a business like that.
How old are you?
4 years old.
4 years.
This is the complete opposite life to how I grew up. I ended up moving to Australia in Brisbane when I was 5. I lived in Australia for about, 20 years before I ended up moving back home. And that was just last year in July.
And you don't miss the concrete lifestyle at all?
Even though we had an awesome life in Australia, or living the high life over there, but it was just had enough. It's time to come home.
Especially for the kids as well.
Yeah.
It was their, a big part of our decision. Because I never got to grow up around my culture and all of that. And that's not really something I want them
to miss out.
To miss out on. But I can still learn with them. Last year was probably the first time I ever been on a farm. So I never really actually got to see this side of New Zealand.
So you were putting a lot of faith, weren't you, in Quinn's decision?
Whatever he, wants to do, I'm full 100% support.
But it's just that same thing, eh? Just like winning the Ahu Whenua is a responsibility. I think the same thing having children and being the head of a family, there's a lot of responsibility. Anything I'm thinking about doing, I'm always thinking about bettering us as a whole, not just myself.
You guys are young in the industry. How do you view things like the challenges for the environmental stewardship and climate change?
I sort of understand bits and pieces about it and environmental plans and being Māori, being kaitiaki, that's always first on our priorities. Yep. Looking after our waterways, nitrogen usage. We do learn about it. I'm lucky enough that my employers are pretty on top of that, and they taught me that from the get-go, so it's good to come as you're coming through. It's good to know all these sorts of things, and then so we're prepared. Hopefully, in the future when we get our own farm.
Hey, so your first time down this bit of the farm. What do you reckon?
I know it's nice though. You got the mountain on the back in the background. A lot of trees around here too.
Yes, it's all looks. Exciting right now.
And it's a fine day, that helps.
Oh, yeah,
beauty day. Been cold in the mornings though, but now we'll get used to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, toughen up, I think.
Quinn and Samantha Morgan.
People might not know that milking cows isn't as bad as you think. You should probably give it a try one day.
Country Life, 101 FM.
Now Cosmo Kentish Barnes is taking us to North Canterbury. He's with self-taught farmer and grower Phil Varley. They're at the Pihi Farms property Phil owns with his partner, Catherine Campbell.
We're just above...
Oh, actually, sorry, I didn't press record.
I've done a whole interview like that.
So you should have just recorded when you rocked up. That would have been easier, isn't it?
Now, Phil, can you tell me where we are? And a bit about the land and when you first came here.
Yep, sure. So we're in the hills above Manuka Bay, which is just about 10 minutes southeast of Cheviot, halfway between Christchurch and Kaikoura on the east coast. And we got this place about 3 years ago now, and we didn't really actively manage it for the first 6 months or so. It had been lease grazed and pretty abused landscape for probably about 20 odd years before we came along, and we just wanted to give it a little bit of time to rest. And so we kind of had about 8 to 10 months of just letting it go fallow and seeing what happened. And then we kind of slowly got ourselves up here and started getting ourselves established and tapped an area so we could get in and start doing some gardening and growing a few little things too, and then started getting some livestock and a bit more actively managing the property and then seeing how we could use those animals to just improve the landscape.
And how many hectares have you got in
total? We're just over 20 hectares, so about 50 acres in old money.
And it's quite steep rolling country.
Yep. These rolling parts are really manageable, and then the steeper stuff you need to take a wee bit more care and attention in what you're doing, particularly with the livestock.
And that steep part goes down to a big pine plantation.
So we've got our neighbour's forestry block next door that's about 90 hectares of pines that just go over a few hills and ridges there, and we're really fortunate to be able to actively manage that as well, so we have an agreement to graze that too. So that's really handy for summer and winter grazing, to be perfectly honest, somewhere that's sheltered and warm in winter, and then a bit of shade in summer. It's really important for particularly the cattle.
Now, you've got your caravan perched on the highest point of the land.
Yep, it's a pretty neat spot. We're really well sheltered from the northeasterly here, which is the persistent cold wind, and so these pines provide us a lot of protection. But we are really exposed to the nor'wester, which can barrel through, and so that's why we do have a bit of shelter up, and we have planted trees along the end of the ridge before it drops away there, just to provide us that shelter. But as it is in Canterbury, nothing grows that quick without water, particularly trees, so it'll take a wee while, but I'm sure we can enhance the microclimate we've got.
And eventually, would you like to build a house here?
Yeah, absolutely. We'll build here one day. Probably on this spot is where we're thinking. That's why we originally came with a caravan. We wasn't sure. A bit of a tricky piece of land to kind of design and work around, so it was just to be able to come here and move around and just experience the landscape, the weather, and just figure out kind of where is the optimal place from an energy perspective and time, and then money as well.
You've already established quite a large market garden here.
Yeah, it's pretty intensive, and we're just reorientating the beds at the minute, so there's not a lot in there now. But the main things we grow kind of fit in with the whole farm system that we've got, which, because the livestock are the bulk of our income, and do take quite a bit of time to manage in terms of how we do that, the veg production space has really got to work around that. And so we grow crops that are kind of pop in the ground and we kind of set and forget. And so
easy care,
low maintenance, and so we'll take out probably almost a third of our growing space with garlic, so that's quite a big thing what we grow. And then we also grow tewa, Maori potatoes is the other thing that's a chunk of what we grow, and again we can plant them in September and then we don't harvest those till April, which gives them a real opportunity to get nice and big. And I can show you some of the different varieties we've got there, really unusual, highly nutritious and just a delight to eat, eh?
Let's go and have a look.
Yeah, sure. And then also we grow in the sense of those tubers, Jerusalem artichokes, which we've just taken the tops off here now. And then another unusual one this far south in New Zealand would be yakon, which is another tuber, but a very sweet, almost pear-like texture. And that's really quite popular as well.
Ah, now what's in this
so
container
here?
So here's
just a little selection of some of the things we grow. So this is Erinichia, purple potato. These are a long cylinder shape with a little nodes on them, and I kind of describe them as purple poos. And this is white porra porra, which is a purple and white mottled potato.
It's quite big.
Yeah. I think in terms of all the ones we produce, they tend to look quite big, and that's what kind of the chefs that we work with kind of say, that they generally don't see them coming in this size from anywhere else. And I think that's part of the how we manage the soil and part of that long growing season. They are quite resilient. If you can, I guess, get good seed stock and then look after that, they can be really easy care, really prolific in a really low input environment, which is kind of what we're after, you know. And the other side of that is when I kind of learnt about the history of them and the meaning and how they're literally seen as taonga, I think as a treasure, it's appealed to me quite a lot. And so I've just wanted to kind of continue this heritage, really, and see how we can improve the seed stock available, because there's a lot of them out there that are susceptible to a lot of pests and diseases. And so I think if we can concentrate on keeping and retaining some really good resilient seed stock, then we've got that legacy to pass on to the next generation.
Fascinating. Now, you've got a huge garlic in here. I mean, it's massive. One of the cloves is as big as a bulb you'd see in the supermarket.
Yeah.
How do
absolutely.
You get them that big?
Oh, well, that variety is actually elephant garlic. So it's actually more like a leek in flavour and texture. But again, it's just been years of growing and selecting the best and then looking for the traits that we want. And so we are farming for a trait that is a low input, easy to grow, and then by keep selecting the biggest, most resilient bulbs and the ones that keep really well, you can keep improving year on year on year. So this is both these, like when you're looking at the potatoes and this Rioja garlic, which is still pretty good size for an average bit of garlic, you know, there's kind of 10 years of us kind of working on that improvement through there.
So what's your target market for the produce that you grow?
We're just small scale. We just sell to restaurants. We're not wanting to compete with the market gardeners that are doing the high value, high turnover beets, carrots, lettuces, radishes. That's kind of not where we're at. We're just growing a small selection of speciality veggies and just trialling a few that we can hopefully harvest for many years.
Now, behind us is a tool shed that you've constructed, and it looks very organised.
I guess when it comes to what we're doing on the farm, we've got to be super efficient. And this is kind of goes back, I don't know if you know much about like lean manufacturing. There's kind of a lean farming leg of that, which looks at basically how you can make super efficient what you're doing to actually be profitable at a small scale. And so having things organised in a place where you know where they are and know where to find them is really important. And that's why the other reason the shed's right here, a metre away from the garden, so we don't have to traipse over to a shed 100 metres away and drag tools back across.
Yes. So what is your philosophy about the land? What sort of approach do you have towards farming?
It's a really difficult one to answer because I don't think we should be trying to pigeonhole ourselves into certain aspects. I think if we try and say I'm A, B or C farmer, we may shut ourselves off to particular tools that are actually going to be beneficial for us. So I've been fortunate enough to have a lot of experience with a lot of different people, from a permaculture, from organic to biodynamic recently, and then from the term regenerative agriculture. Is funny, you know, 3 years ago I could use that term and nobody knew what I was talking about, so I'd kind of stopped saying it. and it's really cool that it has become way more mainstream now, so that's really good. And you could say, like, the core principles of regenerative agriculture, which are based on soil health, you know, I'd certainly abide by those. But really kind of our overarching philosophy is looking at the whole farm as one organism. And that includes the farmer, the livestock, and the plants.
Mm. What have been some of the biggest challenges so far in terms of developing this land?
Probably our time, to be perfectly honest. When you're starting out on something, I guess I should go back a step. You know, we're starting not only a farm, but a business and wanting to build a home here as well. So there's a number of things that are coming into play. And so it's trying to be really clear on your priorities. and it's been difficult to discern what some of those are when you've got the day-to-day aspects of managing livestock in quite intensive fashion like we are, and then trying to get some cash flow from the garden, because that kind of cash flows is a bit quicker than, say, what some of the livestock do. And so, yeah, time and being really clear on what our priorities are is probably the hardest part of that.
Mm. Shall we wander down the hill and have a look at some of your animals?
Yeah, sure.
Tell me about your puppy.
So this is Em. We got her just about 6 weeks ago. She's a border collie cross-heading dog. And, yeah, we've got kind of high hopes for her. She'll be able to help us with some of the livestock. But the other thing is I'm diabetic, and we're on the way to training to be able to sense when my blood sugars go either low or high, so she can indicate to me when I need to do something about that. So that'll be really cool if we can manage to get there. And I think, we're on the right track with it so far.
I like him. Now, what are you carrying?
I'm carrying a Wee Solar Energizer, which we use for our temporary electric fencing with the livestock. And so one of our cheeky little goats had chewed through that just last night. So that's my bad for leaving it where I shouldn't have done. And so I've just had it back up at the shed repairing it earlier. And so we'll go down and put a bit more power in this fence to make sure they don't kind of push through. But by and large, most of the stock are well trained to it and respect it pretty well.
Now we've crossed the paddock and come into the shade of the trees, and it's a lot colder, isn't it, when we're out of the sun?
It is.
Whoops.
It is.
You okay?
Yeah.
Thank you. Just climbing over a fence. Oh, and there's some rusty barbed wire there.
Oh. Here.
On the other side of the shelter belt. Yeah, that's fine. It's a very steep paddock, and it's a bit of a sun trap here, isn't it?
Yes, this is actually quite neat. We're kind of westerly facing here, so we've got a real neat view from up here over the Hurunui River Valley down there, and it's nice to see actually a bit of green not only on the plains but on the terraces too.
We can see the river there, which I guess is running super high.
Yeah, absolutely, and it probably will be for a wee bit to come.
Were you able to get over the bridge earlier this week?
Yeah, we were pretty fortunate, but it was as high as I've ever seen it. It was almost to the underside of the State Highway bridge there. Phenomenal amount of flow. I wouldn't like to estimate what the flow was, but yeah, it was a milky torrent, that's for sure.
At the bottom of the hill, we can see some belted Galloways, some sheep, some other cattle, and in the distance, sheep are dotted over the steep, shady hills.
Yep. So our boundary's just down at the bottom here. So these Belties and the other black cows with them, the low-lying Anguses, they're ours. And then we've got a mixture of sheep breeds. We're still trying to work out what's going to work best for us on the landscape. I was pretty keen to start off with Wiltshires, or at least shedding sheep. Not a big fan of needing or wanting to shear. But yeah, we're just not quite finding their sizing up quite the same as some of the other breeds that we've got around. So we'll still try and persevere with them maybe, but we'll just see how we go. But the Belted Galloways and the low-lying Angus have been really good for our landscape, because we are reasonably hilly here and parts of the farm have fragile soils on. We were quite keen to focus in on traits that are desirable for this type of landscape. So that's animals with short legs and a bit of a lighter frame. And I've got to say, those Belties have been a real surprise to us. They're a bit of a nostalgia. You know, I don't know if you know much about the Belted Galloway originating in southwestern Scotland, in an area with quite high rainfall and certainly lower summer temperatures than what we get here. But they've been really exceptional and just really, really good-natured.
And do they have a nice marbled mate?
They do. We haven't actually harvested any one of our Belties yet. We were due to last week, but because of the rains, we couldn't get out. But yeah. But I've heard from the butcher and other people that, yeah, generally, if you've got a Beltie that gets beyond that 2.5 years old, they really start to build that marbling. So we're hoping that there'll be a real special eating experience. And even the low-lying Anguses that we've had to date, they've been, yeah, really unique taste, and I'm not sure. We kind of feel that might be down to the fat layer, and because we're on kind of our forage is quite diverse, but we've got some areas in the forest where they eat a bit of bush and just a multitude of different things that they're eating. So I think that diversity in the diet's really adding to a uniqueness in the taste and the texture.
We've come down to the bottom of the hill, and a small flock of sheep are surrounding us.
Yep. because of the dry weather, we've probably, gosh, we've got rid of more than half our ewes, and have only got a few ewe lambs left from this season left in the flock, one for the quality of feed. So we'll try and cull fairly hard as well. So there's still a few in here that I want to get rid of that don't look so neat, that, you know, I'll have like a wee bit of any kind of sign of dagging or just not holding good body condition, then we'll flick them on, because we need to keep animals that are actually going to work in with our management style. And there's, you know, we don't use any kind of commercial drenches. We use kind of some organic based ones, but, you know, there's still time and energy even into that that we're not really wanting to do. So we want some low maintenance, easy care ewes that can hopefully produce decent lambs that we can start getting some money from eating.
And you're quite fortunate, because about 5 km down the road, closer towards the Hurunui River, is the Harris Meats Abattoir.
Yep. So the Harris Meats Abattoir is really one of the reasons why we ended up in London in this spot, because we knew we wanted to do something with animal protein, and just knowing that those last few hours and moments of an animal's life has a really big impact on the quality of the eating experience, that we wanted to be able to manage that as closely as possible right to the end, because, you know, we put a lot of time and energy into managing our whole flock for, well, the cows could be, you know, two to 2.5 years. And so we want those last moments to be really, you know, as least disturbing for them as possible, so you don't have that adrenaline and cortisol running through the body. So we're really fortunate. We've got our own stock trailer. I can take the stock down there myself on the morning that they're going to be culled. They're only in the yards for a short period of time before they're taken through. And Harris's as well have kind of got a really neat philosophy and have done some work with Temple Grandin to really understand low-stress animal handling techniques, which is really important for us.
Phil's just opened a gate and he's about to move the mob into the lower paddock. And there's a few stragglers running down from the top of the hill.
I'll just wander around this way then.
Do you live part of the time in town and the rest of the time here? How does it work?
Yeah, correct. So kind of I try and split my time 50-50-ish between the farm and the town, so in Christchurch.
What do you do in town?
So I work generally on construction projects, doing project management and consultancy services. I actually kind of really like the juxtaposition of the, I guess, the social side of the work we do in town versus, I guess, it's a wee bit more solitary up here. We've got some pretty good neighbours, but by and large, what you're doing in terms of the work's your own responsibility and down to yourself, what you're gonna get done or not.
Yes. Now, Em, your dog, has been poking her head through my legs, hiding, I guess, from a steer that's been chasing her around the paddock.
Yeah, well, I think they're kind of intrigued, aren't they, with her still. She's still kind of, obviously, she's quite new with us, and it's actually quite nice that she's almost a little bit afraid of some of the bigger stocks, so she's not going to be aggressive or anything like that. But I think she'll have a good life, and she'll make a good dog once she gets a wee bit more confident around the stock.
Where are you from originally, Phil, and where does your interest in farming come from?
So I'm originally from Yorkshire in England, and we grew up in quite a rural area, just a little village. We did have a little small holding over there, a couple of acres is what we grew up on, but my dad only really just grew vegetables, and we had a few chickens, and I'd not actually really interacted with livestock long before us kind of getting the farm. And so I'm definitely not experienced in farming. I haven't had any formal agricultural training, but kind of sparked an interest in just terms of wanting to live a relatively low impact life, and then just having a thirst for knowledge around it. It just really interested me. And then the more I found out, the more I thought, blimey, you know, you can do some really good things with livestock and grasses in terms of improving landscapes, having massive impacts on water quality, and even to the extent of reducing the impact of climate change. So there's massive potential with how we manage land, and probably the only way we'll kind of be a more resilient world for a long time to come will be focusing on land management.
And how did you end up here in New Zealand?
love, like I guess like most people end up the halfway around the world. So I met Catherine where I'm working back in the UK over 10 years ago, and she was coming to the end of her ancestry visa, so she'd spent about 5 years over there. And so, yeah, I convinced her to let me come back with you.
And the rest is history.
It is.
Phil Varley talking to Cosmo near Cheviot in North Canterbury. And that's Country Life for another week. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week at the same time with more stories from rural New Zealand. Until then, have a great week.